Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains.
Excellent, and the weather today, highs of 18 degrees centigrade, lows of 9 degrees centigrade, and there's the possibility of some light rain showers. Well, yeah, we just actually sort of have been working through a whole variety of things. It is, of course, the day of the first launch of the Burr, the International Horse Trials, and we're delighted to welcome Richard Fitzwilliams after a fantastic rehearsal, Richard, to actually connect with us on this day. Where I think, first of all, we want to say a few things about, obviously, the commemoration of Princess Diana.
Yes, indeed, because today Princes William and Harry will be visiting the beautiful sunken White Garden at Kensington Palace with her favourite flowers, and they'll meet representatives of the six charities which were closest to Diana's heart and for which she campaigned so brilliantly after she gave up a large number of others in 1996. And it will be a time when, as we've been reflecting in recent weeks with a tremendous amount of publicity, we can read and, in fact, reenacted in so many papers day by day the tragedy of the last week of her life, and also, of course, there's no question, the Prince of Wales has popularity has suffered a great deal in polls. There's little doubt that Diana was extraordinary. She was able, despite a broken home, despite a disastrous marriage, despite a personal life which was so unhappy, she could reach out to others and did so with the most extraordinary results. I mean, she undoubtedly was one of the top charitable figures, given her achievements, of the last century. And it's important. William and Harry are devoted to her memory. She adored them. And they've been, as you know, bearing their souls, talking about very, very personal details on
It certainly was one of those interesting things from my own perspective, that two of the leading lights when it comes to caring for others, perhaps less fortunate than ourselves and so on, passed away within the same period of time. Obviously, Princess Diana and, of course, Mother Teresa of Calcutta.
Who was also a figure who everyone admired. I mean, it is extraordinary, yes. And, I mean, looking back also to Diana's legacy, did she change Britain? She showed another side to Britain. And after the amazing, and the William and Harry were talking about this on the BBC documentary, 7 days, I mean, the absolutely extraordinary outpouring of grief from those who didn't know her but could either identify with her, with the fairy tale marriage that became such a disaster, or alternatively, they were grieving for not only what had been lost, but also the potential in future decades. But it was extraordinary. I mean, Harry was talking about that he didn't cry, and he was glad he didn't, but to shake the hands of someone whose hands were wet from tears shed for his mother, it really was, well, quite amazing. And also the way they've spoken out to help others, this is what one has to emphasize, because what's so important is this is what I think Diana would have wished. They're speaking out as they have, and quite controversially sometimes. I mean, these interviews going back to April and May with William and Harry, they've been trying to help others suffering from mental issues, trauma, depression. This is also an emphasis they're going to be pursuing, because their mother absolutely adored them, and they want to feel that she would be proud of them. And indeed, yesterday it was announced the further charitable work they'll be undertaking in these areas. And there's no question that Diana was like some form of meteor which illuminated the royal family, that there was much unhappiness there, we know, but equally so many were helped.
One's mindful of the Father Perrault character in the Frank Capra 1937 movie Lost Horizon, in which he advocates the ultimate importance of working through a philosophy of human beings which is restful upon two key words: be kind. Be kind.
Absolutely. You recall the incidents when Diana actually quoted a poem which said that all the sad world, that was what it needed.
Let's progress then to a movie which I think, through the bizarre nature of the way in which this review has been put together, I have a sense maybe you're not going to fly the flag for Daniel Craig as solidly as I thought you might. Who knows, maybe it'll be Channing Tatum, maybe it'll be something else, maybe it'll simply be the case of using the word Logan, as in Logan with the Wolverine and Hugh Jackman, Logan's Run, or various other things. Or is it Logan Lucky?
Logan Unlucky for me, because although the name Soderbergh conjures so many memories for me, the youngest ever winner of the Palme d'Or for Sex, Lives and Videotape, films such as Erin Brockovich, Traffic and Magic Mike, his Ocean's 11, Che was the only dud, and here I felt that it's basically a hillbilly heist. The critics have got very enthusiastic about it, and I think Wes Anderson would have handled it a bit better. We meet Jimmy Logan, played by Channing Tatum, who's usually reliable. His promising career has been ruined by injury. He works, very important, this for a firm called Speedway. He visits his wife, Bobby Joe, played by Katie Holmes, but learns they're going to move away to a different state. That will make access to his child difficult. He goes to his brother's bar. Clyde, played by Adam Driver, has a prophetic hand, which he, we learn quite a lot about the hand during the movie, which is lost in military service. And Jimmy and Clyde plan to use his knowledge of Speedway's new pneumatic tube system, I'm no scientist, don't ask me to explain this, for moving money, siphon it off during a car show. Lots of noise, a good idea. So there are motor racing scenes in this movie, and to do it properly, they have to recruit Joe Bang, played by Daniel Craig, a convicted safe cracker, and also Joe's brothers, not the brightest in the world, Sam and Fish, and their sister Melly are involved. Joe has got, however, to be back since he's incarcerated in jail at the end of the day. So they manage to enter the Speedway vault. Joe and Clyde, who's also been incarcerated, arrange for a riot in the prison so they can escape, and the vacuuming of money begins. Enter, after the heist, Sarah Grayson, wasting Hilary Swank. Should be a very, very serious crime. She's from the FBI, hard to investigate it. And this is a movie where you're relying on quirky characters to amuse or entertain. You're relying on a lively and colourful plot, or it should be. It doesn't help. Most of them are inaudible, including Daniel Craig, for much of it. And it also doesn't help that very little of it, if you're not entertained by the story, if you just don't feel it works, it doesn't gel well, you do become irritated. And this sort of cookie, unusual comic movie set around a heist, some of them work, some of them don't. For me, it was undistinguished, colourful pap.
So even though Adam Driver was cast by Soderbergh in a movie about driving, you still felt as though it wasn't appropriate?
A point that I think a sage would make,
That's perfectly okay. And would you subscribe to the notion that apart from the Bond movies and maybe Layer Cake, Daniel Craig still hasn't managed to raise his star out of the firmament to actually ensure that he can take part in a good movie? I mean, after, of course, Cowboys versus Aliens, what's not to love?
Well, there's a lot to love in Daniel Craig's career, and I'm waiting to see the next Bond movie. I'm waiting with trepidation because two have been excellent and two have been awful or very poor. Frankly, Craig has talents. It depends how and where they're used here, in my view, especially since I couldn't hear much of what he was saying. And quite honestly, after a while, inaudible dialogue makes things tedious. But it was also the fact that it just somehow didn't gel as I was hoping that it would. But I have to admit, critics have loved it.
It's with a certain amount of trepidation as well that I move on to the next tale, because what happened with our particular system when we were first reviewing a ghost story, maybe it has something to do with Whoopi Goldberg, maybe Patrick Swayze, maybe making Potter's scenarios, but it's got nothing to do with that in any way, shape or form, apparently.
Well, a ghost story, certainly no link with the earlier film and certainly no horror movie, but it's a very, very strange movie. This is what cinema is about. The fact that I was not especially fond of the take, this particular take, is purely personal. The facts are we want experiment, and this is David Lowry directs, and we meet a character called C, a musician, Casey Affleck, with his wife M, played by Rooney Mara. They're an extremely close couple, as we see early in the film. One of them, C, dies in a car crash. No sooner has M seen him in the mortuary than, well, he's got a white sheet over him, and then he rises, and holes appear where his eyes are, and he treks back to the house he knew, and then he watches what happens. Whether we see distress and grief on the part of M, or whether horrors, what happens if she brings back a lover? And he can be very, very temperamental, this ghost. I should emphasize that the characters he's watching don't know he's there, but noises can be heard in the house, and C and M were aware that the house was haunted. So when a Hispanic family arrives and meal times and he throws a tantrum, then they're not unnaturally disturbed that all sorts of things are being flung around, and then subsequently the next occupants hold a party, and there again it's, well, a guest called Will Oldham. We hear him give a nihilist dissertation. This is one of the few occasions where there's any script in this movie. I mean, the ghost communicates with a fellow ghost with sign language, and we see that with subtitles. This is a ghost in an adjoining home. But, of course, what happens when the bulldozers move in? Or, indeed, ghosts have other abilities. They can move back in time to the period where settlers were threatened by Native Americans, and there's an extraordinary scene there. I mean, if you move forward, what happens to the place where there were homes, and what can that be transformed into? I mean, there are plenty of ideas here. Some have found this a spiritual experience. It's about memory, about the passing of time. It's about loss. It is a very strange film. It will have very limited appeal. My particular take in it is that it's what cinema should be about, because it is experimenting, and it's not anything that I frankly greatly appealed to me, but it is ingenious, and a lot of thought has gone into it. And whereas I would have loved to have known the characters better, that wasn't the way the film was looking at them. We see things through the perspective of the ghost. We don't get to know the humans, who are extremely interesting in various ways, which I would have liked. But then that's the conventional film where you get to know the characters, or not if the film fails. This is definitely a unique movie, and it's also received very, very high ratings from the critics.
David Lowry, of course, not only directed it, he also wrote it as well. So clearly getting double fees from that point of view, and interesting stuff. So I get a general sense, Richard, that actually both with Logan Lucky and A Ghost Story, we're kind of, it's middle of the road. We're on the fence. We're not really, we're certainly not positive, but we're kind of thinking, well, all right, if you appreciate that kind of thing.
Well, may I rephrase? I would say Logan Lucky, for me, was overall pretty negative, though I accept that since most reviews enjoyed it, I've emphasized that, because those who like the sort of thing will find that Soderbergh will produce a comic movie full of eccentrics. For A Ghost Story, I mean, it's unlike anything I've seen or am likely to see, but I do encourage these extraordinary ideas, because that's, especially when they work, and parts of this did for me and parts of it didn't, that's what makes cinema what it is.
I feel as though it's almost been an epic in many ways this morning, Richard, and yet, you know, we look at the time and it's still ticking over quite neatly. Would you like to have a short musical break before we talk about Game of Thrones?
Most emphatically.
There's a ghost in my house. There's a ghost in my house. The ghost of your memory. The ghost of the love you took from me. Where our love used to be. All these shadows from the past I see. Time can't seem to erase the vision of your smiling face. Though you found someone new, I can't get over you. There's a ghost in my house that can't hide from the ghost of your love that's inside. It keeps on haunting me, just keeps on reminding me. In my mind I know you're gone, but my heart keeps holding on to the memories of those happy times, to the love that once was mine. I feel your fingers running through my hair. Looking down at my coffee cup, I think I see your face looking up. All alone in my gloom, your voice echoes through the room. There's a ghost in my house.
Honestly, it's as bad as going to Westeros and finding out that Daenerys isn't there and you've got a dragon and various other factors there. Or maybe it's just George R. R. Martin actually writing a modern-day equivalent, or indeed a latter-day equivalent of the medieval morality play. Or is it an epic cast? Is it a commentary on royal shenanigans? Richard Fitzwilliams, what do you make of the phenomenon, and I say the word again, phenomenon, that has been, and still is, Game of Thrones?
Well, I find it absolutely fascinating. I mean, so much of it, of course, you can go back to the Norse legends, classical or ancient Greece, ancient Rome, and most particularly, of course, our own monarchical history, because much of it, the inspiration for it, the two houses, Lannister and Stark, being the equivalents of York and of Lancaster and York in the monstrous Wars of the Roses, which went on in medieval times for over 30 years. And a character that fascinates me, Cersei Lannister, who is one of the villains, but nonetheless still queen. Now, we have to be careful of spoilers if anyone hasn't seen it, but before this episode, we were wondering what was going to happen, because there was going to be a dramatic meeting, but also there was going to be a dramatic clash between Cersei and Daenerys. Daenerys of the Targaryen dynasty, who ruled Westeros for over 250 years. But then, and this is one of the problems with monarchy, it can throw up someone who's mad, and the mad King Aerys was killed by Lord Robert Baratheon, who married Cersei, and Cersei's children, all dead now, were actually incestuously conceived by her brother Jaime. Her other brother Tyrion is totally against her, and we have a clash between Daenerys, who is together with, very probably or possibly, could Jon Snow have anything to do with the rightful line of succession? Daenerys has, after all, two dragons. She had three, with one being shot down by the King of the North. What will happen there? And indeed, there's a war, remember, that protects the Seven Kingdoms. What will occur, and will that war be breached? Will Cersei hang on to the throne? Will Daenerys usurp her? Because she is, after all, closer to the rightful dynasty and a member of the dynasty. Or what about Jon Snow? What about his parentage? And what about Lord Baelish, Littlefinger, a character who connives? What about the illegitimate Gandry, and so on. So there was so much in this episode, and it's, I can only say that it has whetted my appetite for what is to come. I don't want to get...
Really? You're going to become a throner then, Richard?
Definitely so, but one of the things I admire about this series, it's very colourful, and indeed it's got, as we know, enormous numbers of admirers. But one of the things that really has always been good, and that is, I have not seen all the episodes, but I have seen all the battles, and they are especially good in using CGI to some extent, is true, but also, for example, in the Battle of Winterfell, the piles of corpses and the way the action was handled, I mean, that is absolutely superb. They really, really have impressive action scenes, and we've seen the response to this, so also some amazing acting, which, I mean, Peter Dinklage has... The Tyrion is especially good, and I mean, Cersei Lannister played by Lena Headey, what's not to love or hate there?
So would you ultimately say, okay, as far as Game of Thrones is actually concerned, it's a splendid romp, but factually it's nothing to do with Jon Snow, the Channel 4 newsreader?
I think that it's probably a matter for dispute, because anything to do with Game of Thrones is a matter for dispute among the fans, so I leave it to them.
Well, I think that'll work for me. So we've progressed.
I enjoyed it enormously. I think it's something that I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens, given the fact the legions of the undead and the dead pose a very serious threat to human existence. But what about the devious plotting? What about betrayal? What happens?
It's just Brexit all over again, isn't it, really? But so
well, yes, indeed. Absolutely.
Maybe we should check out American Gods, which is being billed as the new Game of Thrones, and again, well worth accessing as it's commissioned for another series from Amazon Prime. So that has pretty much brought us to the end of I feel as though it's been an epic scenario, Richard, in more ways than one. But we have actually concluded it successfully, which is brilliant. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on this programme today?
More than reasonably.
Excellent. So I take it then we'll be back in full force for the first official Richard Fitzwilliams movie review of September 2017 next week.
Absolutely.
Follow your arrow. just get so many trips round the sun that you
Musgraves, Follow Your Arrow, which of course focused a key part, or was a key part, of the celebrations, and will be a key part of the celebrations of Sound and Country Vision, Volume 12 and 13. So much celebrations, Tessa Snott has been coordinating, that it actually deserves a double whammy of joy and happiness. And you can hear Sound and Country Vision's Volume 12 this evening, just after 7 o'clock on Siren FM. So, we now turn to somebody who has followed his arrow. He's celebrated a whole variety of things. Previously, of course, we had the concern that Newcastle United were pointless. That has now been put to bed, and how, you might well say, with a sensational victory, hammering the hammers. No doubt, Ian Lennox, you are so delighted you wanted to go and see England lose at Headingley.
That's right.
Yeah, so there we are, you see. It's the joy from that point of view. So, did you see the Newcastle-West Ham game? Let's talk a bit about
that. Oh, yes.
All well now, Mike Ashley is the messiah, and Rafa Benitez doesn't need to sign anybody else. It's all going to be a glorious season.
I don't think so, but never mind. I normally sit in a central position in the match, this time I sit in the corner of the ground, and my eyesight is just long vision. It is not. I can see what's going on, but I can't see who's doing what to whom.
Ah, yes.
And so
binoculars, Ian.
So anyway, they send on Mitrovic about 20 minutes to go, half an hour to go.
Yes.
And he gets through, bless the ball, and it goes straight at his heart. And two or three minutes later, I think Perez gets the ball. He skips around Hart and puts the ball in the net. And I turned to my son and said, if that had been Mitrovic, he wouldn't have scored. And Gavin says to me, Dad, that was Mitrovic.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'll just
give up. Well, Ian, you know what you should do? Well, that's one possibility. Or take a pair of opera glasses. That would actually add to the quality.
I'll go very well in the Gallagher then, yeah.
Well, that's exactly what I'm thinking about. It would show a new level. Well,
probably a new fashion.
Exactly, of gentrification, where you can actually get out the opera glasses and sort of say, I say, what? And really exhibit that scenario. Meanwhile, let's talk about the other thing, which I know John Wenham will be particularly keen and interested on. What happened? I mean, West Indies winning a test series. What happened, Ian? What did you say to them?
Sit down, mainly. After Joe Root made a perfectly good declaration, so I can say there's absolutely no one at the time made any criticism of what he was doing. And the two youngest batsmen on the pitch played really well. And England didn't bowl, well, some of the bowlers didn't bowl particularly well. And the West Indies won. Fair play to them. I think the score, the total they got, was one of the biggest ever for a fourth innings at Headingley, I think.
So
I'm not doing anything in Cumberland route.
So I get the sense that, in essence, it wasn't anybody's fault as such.
But people are saying, you know, you're talking about his declaration. There's no one to criticise his declaration at the time. No one. So how can they just turn around at him and say, it's your fault, it could have come.
Well,
he made a call and nine times out of ten, it would have been the right one. In a sense, they would have won.
Well, meanwhile, let's move on to your writing, because I have news, Ian. I bring news. Literally, over the last 24 hours, I've spoken to Dr. David Cobham, who's just about to make plans to head over to Penang to deal with a whole range of wonderful, exciting things over there. We'll be speaking to David there. And he handed me back yesterday a copy of The Net by your good self, Ian Lennox, and said he thought it was a thoroughly enjoyable read, and that I was to pass those words on to you, and he'll do so himself when he gets back into Britain, and we'll speak again in October probably. So there we are. It's a thumbs up for The Net, keeping the footballing theme going. So,
good.
Yeah. All we need now is the movie rights, and then all will be sorted out in every sense. So good
news. Did Phil ever finish Phil and Ernest? Did he ever finish The Brothers?
Well, funny you should say that. He has received it, and I believe what he did say to me was he doesn't want to just start it and kind of leave it to one hand. He wants to go for it in one fell swoop, which might be a bit like sort of too much goodness at the same time, effectively. But as soon as he has, then I will obviously pass on those details. And in fact, hopefully, assuming he can kind of stay up for about midnight in Los Angeles time in a few weeks, you'll be able to liaise with him directly. In fact, we'll be close to 1 o'clock in the morning by the time we do these links.
All right.
So yes, we're working through that. So we come to the internationals. Do you think that Wayne Rooney made the right decision in terms of stepping down? And do you feel as though no problem whatsoever, it's onwards to Russia and the winning of the World Cup?
Well, I think Wayne Rooney made the right decision. And he's the only person who really knows, because he's now in his early 30s, I think. Mm. He definitely can't run like he used to. Mm. Though he's still got great skills and technique.
Neither can we, Ian. I mean, there was a time.
I think he's having a renaissance at Everton, because they play more around him than Manchester United did. Oh. And good luck to him. I've got nothing to say against his decision at all, no.
So will you be watching the upcoming games that England are taking part in, or is it a case of, well, we'll just wait and see? It's not quite as solid.
I can't fit it with all these blooming qualifying games. They're usually against sometimes I don't even know the country they mind the players in.
Well, you see, there are so many attacks there.
It's all run by money, isn't it? It's a break every... I don't know how many breaks are on the football season now for international breaks.
It's the natural international break. I mean, there was a time, actually, where it was really just about this time where the season was starting. I remember back in the day, it was usually the last week in August or thereabouts where you'd actually start for the whole thing. And yet here we are, we're already talking about potential champions and a whole variety of other bits and pieces, including why Raheem Sterling was actually sent off or given a second yellow card and therefore sent off for
I didn't see the incident.
Neither did the referee, but still, never mind. That didn't start
making
a decision.
Well, it's teaming up to Mitrovic. He's been charged with it respectively. Anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe you just need hold themselves back. But can they, in the emotional sense of the word, that emotional cauldron of actually scoring a goal, can they ever really hold themselves back, or is that just it's a cop-out?
I said, what did he do? He celebrated the goal inappropriately, did he?
He celebrated the goal by driving towards the City fans, and that was just too much. And they came on the pitch. And
people always say this, it's the passion of the game thing. Nothing like this ever happens in rugby.
Well, there we are, you see. And you can also hear what the referee's saying to the captain in rugby and the captain's response, whereas clearly you've never actually had that in football, probably because there'd be far too many expletives.
If a football player gone on the rugby pitch, he lasts about 10 seconds because the attitude towards the referees is deplorable, I think. They seem to have a right to challenge everything. Yeah. And in rugby, you're not allowed to.
Well, add to that the wonderful Oscar-winning acting that obviously exists, and who knows what could be happening.
That should be a red card job, I think.
Well,
people diving in the penalty area should be straight off.
Meanwhile, let's congratulate Lincoln City for a glorious 4-1 victory over Carlisle, which led to Keith Curl saying, from the Carlisle manager's perspective, it didn't really reflect the final game itself. Never mind. It's good stuff. Ian, how are Ollie and Oboe?
They've had their breakfast. Oh, no, Oboe hasn't been in, so I don't know. But Ollie's had his breakfast, going back out again, so... There's been fine weather up here, so they tend to stay out a bit longer.
Well, that's it. It could be a wonderful Indian summer. And how's the writing coming on, or are you waiting for Arthur McKenzie to return?
Oh, no, I've just finished it. Mm-hmm. He told me it was going to take about 3 weeks. He took 3 days. He said he couldn't put it down.
There we are, you see.
He really enjoyed it. Yeah. Had some criticism, but he thought it was terrific. So I was really, because he's... quite an esteemed writer, really.
Exactly. He's written for Wycliffe, he's written for The Bill, he's written for a whole variety of things. He's written Five Jims and a Joe, or Five Joes and a Jim, or various other sort of lines from that. It's very confusing. I know Arthur would not forgive you for that, but there we go. He was a UK discus champion. He was an internal affairs correspondent or chief inspector in Hong Kong. He's just an all-round wonderful person, and he can even fix hammocks.
He's writing a play about a grave digger at the moment. At a cemetery that's about to close, I think it's the last grave, and it's something rather important, and it gradually it's a bit like a monologue, I suppose, and it gradually sort of becomes things about the characters become kind of revealed.
Well, these are some of the rich tapestry of things that work through. Now, I know that you're very keen on your fashion and beauty, Ian, so I think you'll appreciate the fact that new research by Covent Garden, which has been looking at the UK's beauty habits, reveals that mothers are the most important influence on women's beauty regimes. And the top iconic stars, Marilyn Monroe and Audrey Hepburn, are both ranked higher than Kate Middleton, Kim Kardashian and Beyonce in terms of icons to look for when you're being influenced by beauty inspiration. So what about the male perspective, Ian? I mean, are you more Kate Middleton, Kim Kardashian and Beyonce, or are you more Marilyn Monroe?
Well, Kim Kardashian and model, but never mind.
Audrey Hepburn.
Well, I can, I suppose, yes. As you well, when I was 23, I think it was, I was asked if I wanted to become a model.
Yes.
And they got around in the office, the journalists, found out about
strike
it.
The pose.
They were just
the pose.
Lying on their backs laughing because
Vogue.
I could turn. Oh God, no. I could turn a 300 guinea suit into a tramp's outfit in about a week.
Well, I mean, apparently,
so I've got absolutely no sense of fashion.
Well, then you're ideal for this next little survey. Women apparently are divided on the subject of wearing makeup to bed. Half believe it's completely inappropriate. However, many women admitted that makeup at the gym is important, with 60% declaring that they like to wear some makeup when exercising.
Right.
Over one third of women in Northern Ireland wouldn't be without makeup to visit a local shop, and over a quarter of mums in the northeast of England, that's your territory, Ian, admitted that they preferred full makeup to do the school run.
Right. I would just ask them gently whether they've got nothing better in their lives to think about.
Oh. Well, with the increasing boom in men's grooming products on the market, when questioned about their own habits, one third of men will now visit dedicated beauty counters. So when was the last time you visited a dedicated beauty counter, Ian Lennox?
The answer is never. I think you might have guessed.
So there you see, that again, another revelation.
I brushed my hair this week, that's about it.
Yeah, well, there we are. Well, we'll be speaking in the second part of the production to fashion model, writer and beauty insider Ruth Crilly, who has been an international fashion model for over 10 years. She's worked for Swatch, Olay, Patrick Cox, River Island and Sunsilk, as well as appearing in editorials for magazines including Elle, Vogue, Glamour, Grazia and Cosmopolitan. All, I think, must-reads in the Lennox household.
Right.
Or maybe not. Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link which has taken us from Newcastle United beating West Ham through the Headingley challenge through to women and makeup?
I have, yeah.
Are you able to join us for the first Midweek Drive morning edition of September 2017, i.e. next week?
Yes, I am.
Excellent, excellent.
Roman candles and burning the night, yeah, you are a shining light. You lit a torch in the empty night, yeah, you are a shining light, yeah, you light up my